Well, you know this story. David, first an obscure shepherd. Then he moves, by God's grace, to become an international celebrity. And then he moves to becoming a desperate fugitive. A long period as a desperate fugitive, and we're just at the beginning of that desperate fugitive stage. The king of the land, King Saul, has now blatantly attacked David, trying to kill him. He's mustered all the resources at his disposal, which are all the resources of the country, and he's after David. And David's running and hiding, and he reasons, where can I go to escape? I'll go to the enemies of Israel. I'll go to the Philistines. I'll be among the Philistines, and Saul won't be able to attack me there. Or at least he probably won't be. And that's where we are in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 10. I'm reading from the English Standard Version. And David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is not this David, the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his tens of thousands." And David took these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the door of the gate and let his spittle run down his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see the man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" And then in the next chapter, David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. Now, turn to Psalm 34, please. The verses that you have identified for you on the chapel bulletin are the verses we will focus on this morning, but I would like to read the entire psalm. It's not a long psalm. Beautiful section of the Word of God. Psalm 34. Of David, when he changed his behavior before Abimelech so that he drove him out and he went away. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Come, O children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is there who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears toward their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, But the Lord delivers him out of them all. He keeps all his bones, not one of them is broken. Affliction will slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. You have a handout, I believe, with blanks on it. If you do not have one of these handouts, raise your hand and someone will bring one to you. We have a few hands up here in the front. I think in just a moment you will receive a delivery. Well, let's start with that first bold line, that first phrase on your handout. When the faithful experience, what goes in the blank? Two words. And I think that one of the words you will be comfortable with and one word you may find a little uncomfortable. My words for the blank are these. When the faithful experience terrible affliction. Terrible affliction. The word terrible is uncomfortable for me, but I do believe it is accurate. We just read from 1 Samuel chapter 21 where David greatly feared when he was in the house of Achish. He was in that palace where he had fled for safety. A perfect example of out of the frying pan into the fire. David realized he was in danger, and the language there is greatly feared. That's the translation from the New American Standard. Greatly could be translated exceedingly, forcefully, abundantly. And to feel afraid is to feel dread or to be terrified. So David was exceedingly terrified. Also, in Psalm 34, which we just read, verse 4, we read, I sought the Lord, and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. Some commentators prefer the word terrors. He delivered me from all of my terrors. In verse 15 and 17, we read that the righteous cry out. They're crying out. The idea is that there's anguish behind that cry. And of course, we can't fail to notice verse 18. The Lord is near to the broken-hearted, broken inside. A wonderful phrase, broken-hearted, or word, broken-hearted, about a terrible experience. But the reference here is to that kind of anguish that we call heartbreak. We sing about it in songs in our culture. We write poetry about it. When we feel heartbreak, sometimes we actually feel it in our chest. It hurts. And then there's that next phrase. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted, and he saves. Oh, let that powerful language sink in. The crushed in spirit. That's why I use the word terrible with affliction. When the faithful experience terrible affliction. And I want you to notice, this is the upright. This is the faithful. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. This is a reference to faithful people, men and women walking uprightly. This is not punitive affliction. This is affliction to the faithful. So, the upright are not exempt from affliction of great magnitude. That's where we start this morning. But that bad news gets worse. Because notice the emphasis in verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. Focus on the word many. You can count on it. I have a confession to make to you. I was, maybe I still am, I'm not sure. It's hard to know oneself completely. I was a closet health and wealth gospel believer. I'm no radio preacher. I'm no televangelist. I don't come from a charismatic background. I'm really not even a charismatic personality. But I've discovered over the years that secretly I am a believer in health and wealth gospel, because I'm the sort of man that when he encounters affliction, he wonders why, what happened. I was serving the Lord. How could this happen to me? This happens to other people. This doesn't happen to me, not to us, not to my family. And it's strange that I would be that kind of closet health and wealth believer, because I'm 55 years old. I've been a Christian counselor for over 30 years. I've heard terrible stories from godly people, ranging from adulterous husband, pastor who ran off with the choir leader, a broken-hearted godly woman, to someone whose child was murdered and severed and put in a plastic bag. I've heard those sorts of terrible stories, and I've known it wasn't about punishment for them. It was a part of living in this broken, fallen world. But when it came my time, I realized that about me and my family, yep, I'm a health and wealther. How about you? But lest I sound too morose and morbid, notice in the outline, there's another blank. Not, and the missing word is always, not always. Yes, for sure, you can count on it. Terrible affliction. As a matter of fact, frequent terrible affliction. You can count on it. Sorry, but not always. Not always. Let's remember this. David did know celebrity. There was a day that women sang, and David's heart rejoiced. They sang about him in the streets and his victory. David knew the king's favor. Yes, there was a day that Saul embraced him. David knew the prince's friendship. Oh, he knew that bond with Jonathan. What joy. What satisfaction in that harmony that he felt with that brotherly love, which was stronger than love for women. We hear that Jonathan loved David more than his own life, more than his very own life. David knew success. He had military success. He had job success. Well, I guess we could say he had position. He had a prestigious career. He was a military leader, part of the government, living in the palace at times with the king. He had prosperity. With that sort of position profession in Israel, I'm sure he had plenty. I know his, well, supposedly, at least if Saul went through with it, David's family didn't have to pay taxes after the Goliath affair. So he had some prosperity, and he had family. I know he had a loving wife. And I know he had connection to his family, because we'll read later. Well, in fact, we just about got there as we were reading in 1 Samuel. He took his family to a foreign country where they would be protected, not the Philistines, another country. And so he was caring about his family. He had some connection. But about his wife, David loved Michal. We read in the scripture that he loved her and she loved him, and they got married. So those were joyous moments. So not always. I'm not totally Eeyore doomsday. Not always. There's another missing word there. I think I need to go back and emphasize, but certainly. That's your missing word there, certainly. So when the faithful experience terrible affliction, and it's not always, but it is certainly, then actually this is a long sentence here in bold. Yahweh sees and hears. I'll tell you a brief story about myself. 3 years ago, pretty much to the day, I was living in a cancer ward. Probably most of you will know that my son was having a second bout of cancer. He was living in a cancer ward, going through a bone marrow transplant, and my voice sounds so nonchalant about it as I describe it. But I did pretty much the night duty with him there. I spent the nights. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes I would be walking in the halls, and in the other 16 rooms in that cancer ward, those people going through bone marrow transplant and high-dose chemo, all of them the same treatment. If in a cancer ward, in the middle of the night, you hear crying and coughing and vomiting and screaming sometimes. To anguish. I spent about a month there those nights. And the odd thing is that when I would leave in the morning, and my daughter-in-law would come in for her morning shift, and we would meet at the little transfer place, and I'd get in the car and she would go up and we'd trade information a little bit, and I would drive home or where we were staying in Birmingham, had the oddest experience. I wanted to be back. I would see all the people going to work. I would go to the grocery store. I would interact with people. Nice folks at a restaurant would say, "Have a nice day. What can I do for you?" They had no idea of where I would be that night, what I would see and hear in my own son's body and in those other 16 families. And maybe it would be not a night when someone died. And those were terrible nights, especially knowing that someone died of the same thing your son has. And you wonder what's going to happen. When I would leave there, I found myself wanting to come back. It didn't feel right to be out there with everyone else because they could not understand. When I was back there on the cancer ward, it was like, okay, people here, they know what it's like. They know what's going on for me. There's something isolating and lonely about experiencing anguish. The more severe the anguish, the fewer the people know what it's like to be you. And therefore you have loneliness on top of the anguish. So I love that Yahweh sees and hears. Verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous. His ears are toward their cry. Does God know? Yes, He knows what it's like. We don't have a high priest who cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing that Yahweh can see and can hear and know. I've quoted Golden Gay from the Baker Commentary. A statement about Yahweh's eyes is always implicitly a statement about Yahweh's, and the word he used an interesting one, concern. Concern. Now, concern is a compound word. We have the word with plus the word sift. Sift as if sift to ponder, to sift, to comprehend. So concern Etymologically speaking, that's a tough one this morning. Etymologically speaking, the word concern comes from understanding, with understanding, with comprehension. And I love the connotation it also has in our language because compassion comes with it. Yahweh sees, hears, understands, has compassion. That's a wonderful thing. But there's more in the sentence. Yahweh is, I must admit, this is the favorite part of this message for me. Yahweh is near. N-E-A-R. Yahweh is near. He is near to the brokenhearted. I know that Yahweh is everywhere. The psalm writer knows that Yahweh is everywhere. We know that he lives inside of us, but there is this other sense that Yahweh, that God tells us in his word, Yahweh is close to the brokenhearted. He's near to the brokenhearted. Picture a mother in the kitchen. Child walks in, actually bursts in, screaming and crying. What does that mother do? And the child is about six. What does mama do? She will move toward, she will get down on her knees, and she will embrace. There's something in a mom and a dad that knows, certainly it's the image of God, that knows that you don't stand at a distance and say, be warmed and filled, child. Like, you're fine, child. You'll be okay. Even truth from a distance when somebody's heart is broken is not right. It isn't okay to say God is sovereign. He'll take care of you. You don't need to cry. A mother or a father knows that there's something about proximity. We're learning right here about how to minister to brokenhearted. Something about that proximity. We cry, Abba, Father. He is our Father. Does he come close? Did he come close to us? Well, yes, he became one of us. Now, I have a few lines here. The mystery at Gath and the surprise at Ziph. What's that all about? Well, the story at Gath, when David was in trouble, and by the way, was he brokenhearted? Is this a time that he could have been brokenhearted? Well, yes. Think of the loss he's just gone through. He's lost the celebrity that he had. He's lost the king's favor. I'm reading the list that we looked at earlier. He's lost fellowship with his beloved friend. He's lost job and position and prestige. He's now a fugitive. He's now betrayed. He's demeaned publicly. He's lost his home. He's lost his wife. Brokenhearted. Yes. How was Yahweh near him in that story at Gath when he pretended to be crazy? I don't know. The mystery at Gath. I don't know how God was near him. I don't know how Yahweh came close. And I don't know how Yahweh will come close to you and how Yahweh has been close to you when your heart's been broken. I don't know, but I know he does. But I do have some ideas, and one of them comes out in Ziph. Well, we didn't read anything about Ziph. Ziph is two chapters later. It's chapter 23. And if you'll look there, please, 1 Samuel chapter 23, let me remind you of this story. David's still early in this fugitive period. He hears that some of his people, his country, in a place called Keilah, are in trouble. And he says, well, God, I've got a little ragtag army at this point. Should I go help them? And Yahweh says, yes, go help them. And against the advice of his close associates, in fact, he asks Yahweh again, are you sure? And Yahweh says, yes, go. He goes, he helps, he delivers them. Saul hears about it. His vulnerability is increased. Saul is on the way. And David prays again, Lord, will the people of Keilah betray me to Saul? And Yahweh says, yes. So he scatters. And he goes into the wilderness of a place called Ziph, which is actually in his territory of Judah. And so he goes to a place where his own countrymen are. And what I'd like to say next, I think Ralph Davis says better. So our brother and commentator, Dr. Ralph Davis, writes these words about this part of the story. Well, before I read Ralph's words, we should read at verse 15 here in chapter 23. David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh, and Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, knows this. And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. And about that, Ralph says this. David could not count on Keilah any more than he could count on Ziph. If the Ziphites were treacherous, the men of Keilah were, in American slang, flaky. If David cannot lean on the gratitude of those he has helped, Keilah, or on people within his own tribal territory, Ziph, where is fidelity to be found? Ironically, in the son of Saul, his enemy. After disappointments with Keilah and before betrayal with Ziph, think about that. After disappointments with Keilah and before betrayal from Ziph, Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh. How well, I do like this commentary. This is probably my favorite commentary reading of all commentary reading. And it's because of passages like this. How well then Yahweh times the encouragement of his servant. Some questions we can't answer, and they are yet worth asking. Without Jonathan's ministry to David, would the Ziphite betrayal have been more than David could bear? Would treachery, Ziph, on the heels of disillusionment, Keilah, have proven too much? How large verse 16 looms. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. He strengthened his hand by telling him and reminding him of the promises of God. But I want you to notice how God chose to encourage his son, David. God sent his word of encouragement. It's a reminder of the prophetic word. You will be king. It's an encouraging reminder of the word. We must minister the word to people. But I want you to notice the medium of ministry. Have you ever thought about this? I have, and I thought, here are some good ideas of ways to send the word of God powerfully to David. He's in a very bad place. He has gone through so much difficulty, and now he's sandwiched in between this betrayal. Oh, despondency could set in so easily. How does God encourage him? He sends his word, and I thought, oh, here's some ideas. Why not send his word on a parchment with some gold writing signed from Yahweh? That would be nice for me. I like that idea. Or maybe an angel could come. like to Elijah, give him some food, tell him the prophetic word. Maybe that would be good. Or maybe Yahweh, he could have come in himself. Yahweh could have come in person. No difficulty for him. But he didn't. How did Yahweh send encouragement? Through one, from the lips of one trusted friend. There's something for Christian counselors there. There's something for pastoral counselors there. Sometimes, what's most encouraging, sometimes maybe the way Yahweh is close to the brokenhearted is through the proximity of some person who will come and be close enough to allow the emotion of the wounded to spill over to them. And thus the Apostle Paul writes, weep with those who weep, mourn with those who mourn. How does Yahweh come near to you when you're brokenhearted? Maybe through one caring, gentle, stammering soul who doesn't have brilliance at the moment, but who gives you his presence or her presence. Something about proximity. And my note here, a message for ministry. Broken hearts don't need eloquence. That's the missing word, eloquence. Nothing wrong with eloquence. Oh, that I had some more of it. Or some of it. But the brokenhearted need presence. They need that personal delivery down to the broken places. That personal delivery of the Word of God. Well, though the 2 points above are wonderful to me, that Yahweh does see and hear, he knows, and that Yahweh does come close somehow, some way, he comes near when our hearts are broken, we must not leave before we notice the last missing word. So let's read the whole sentence. When the faithful experience terrible affliction, Yahweh sees and hears. Yahweh is near. Yahweh rescues. Oh, this is the central theme of our passage, after all. Yahweh saves. Yahweh delivers. When? I don't know when. I don't know how long an afflicted soul will be in the affliction, but I know that at some point he will rescue. Are you afflicted? At some point you'll be on the other side of it. Yahweh will deliver you. I mean, after all, good things even happened to David along the way. After all, Achish ousted a madman. Saul came into a cave later on. That was an interesting story and a good thing. David married Abigail along the way. And actually, David was king. He did become king. So that's why I've written, and I hope it doesn't sound flippant at the end. Last two words, the missing word for both blanks is the word pie. That's right, P-I-E, pie, like pecan, like apple, like blueberry. Little pie on the planet, big pie in the sky. I am not ashamed to hope for heaven. Thankfully, even though we experience many terrible afflictions, there is little pie along the way. There are those reprieves. There are those blessings. There are those moments. Let us rejoice in them, but not be too surprised when they are short-lived or even when they blow up in our face. Little pie does come on the planet, and there is big pie in the sky. And yes, it will be a sweet by and by. There's nothing wrong with rejoicing in that.